Morning. Today's daf in Erevin Nun Gimel. We start today the fifth parak of the Masechta. Ketzav Ma'aver Nesar in the Mishnah on the bottom of Nun Beis Amud Beis is going to be dealing today with the question of how to determine the border of a city for the purposes of Iber. You look at the first Rashi on the Mishnah. In terms of the Lashonos of the Gemara, in terms of Ibor versus Ibor, Ayin or an Aleph, that's going to be play a big part in the daf today. But in terms of the general discussion that we're going to be having in the course of this parak and today's daf, at least in the Mishnah, is going to be a question of how to establish Tchum. In other words, where does Tchum begin? Tchum, as we know, 2,000 amos, where a person cannot walk beyond on Shabbos. If a person is not residing in a city, but just simply on his own, living either off the grid, just in a house without a city, whatever the case is, so the 2,000 amos begins from his makom. Without a house, if in an unusual circumstance where he just simply has no home whatsoever, so he's going to be given dal amos, and then after the dal amos, the 2,000 amos begin. If you have a house or any enclosure, so that house, that enclosure is going to be 2,000 amos. And then afterwards, the area of Tchum begins. We are going to be discussing now a city. The city in its entirety is going to have the status of Dal Amos. And so Tchum is going to begin only after the limits of those cities. And what we'll be establishing over here in this Mishnah is what exactly is going to be the border of the city. How are we going to actually make a halachic border around the city? Ketzad Ma'abre Mesa'arim. That's our Mishnah. And so we begin. So the Mishnah is going to give a number of scenarios. You have a house going in, you have a house coming, a house going out, a house recessing versus a house protruding. Pagum nechnes, pagum yotze. The Mishnah then describes some sort of tower. Again, same idea. One recesses and the other one goes out. And before we go on in the Mishnah, so let's take a look at Rashi over here, where Rashi gives a good description regarding exactly what we mean, a recessed house, a protruding house, klomar, second Rashi in the Mishnah. Klomar kishabalat sayin siman tchom mi ha'ir uvalimdod apayim chutzala. So we're looking to make a border for the city so that we could be measuring, we could start our tchom from that point. Im hava mechitzasa shor igor she'enu choma chalaka. Let's say, for example, the wall of the city is actually not a smooth wall, ela bat mismuchim. It happens to be that the wall is actually created by the exterior houses of the city. Umuchubarim. And they're all connected one to another. So you have contiguous houses, which actually make up the wall of the city. And Rashi describes, Yishpaish nechnasasochayir yoser mechavero, veneers kinisasopeguma mibachutz. And so the houses are not lined up evenly one with another. One house goes and recesses into the city. The other one protrudes out of the city. And so you don't have a straight line. And then Rashi says the same thing as talking about when we're talking about the some sort of towers. Rashi describes over here like a lighthouse, circular towers. And it's the same setup, it's the same scenario. Hakrana Shair Gedudios. We didn't read this in the mission yet. Shiver Chama Shal Charvas Batim Yeshna Besoch Shivam Amav Vishiram Leir Kin Mefarsh Lekaman. Okay, and they're within 70 and 2/3 of the city, but that's going to be discussed later on. Anyway, so the point over here is as follows. So you have now this uneven wall to the city, and now we're going to go back to the Mishnah, and probably you can already guess what's going to happen, and that is that halacha is going to basically even out the wall based on the most exterior of the houses or on the most exterior of the towers. And then what we're going to do, we're going to even it out. Not only are we going to even it out, we're also going to square it. Again, all that's coming up in the Mishnah. We are on the last line of Nun Beis Amud Beis. Hayusham. Gududiyos Kavos Asar Tfachim. So you have these other kinds of structures that are 10 Tfachim high. Ugesharim, or you have some sort of bridge. Undefasha Sheish Ben Beis Dira. Or you have some sort of edifice that's on top of a cemetery. And it's got a Beis Dira. It's got a place where people can sit. So, Motzina Samida Kenegdan. Any one of these structures, well, what it's going to do is it's going to push out the actual border of the city. and the osin of sokim in tavla merubas. Then what you're going to do is you're going to make a square, meaning the most eastern city, the most eastern house, or the most eastern tower, or the most eastern edifice, whatever is considered constructed part of the city. So that on the eastern side, that's going to create our eastern border. Then from there, drawing a line due north, due south, you now have established the eastern border. Despite the fact, obviously, that there is going to be empty space that exists between that eastern border and the eastern wall. Nevertheless, that is how you're going to create the eastern border, and you're going to do that for all four sides. And now, imagine that what's going to end up happening, of course, is that when these two points, let's say the eastern border and the northern border, so when they meet, so most probably what they're going to do is they're going to meet in an area that goes beyond the actual northeast corner of the city. And that's fine. That's exactly what the Mishnah says. Kideshi niskar es azavios. So what you're going to gain is you're going to gain those corners. And it's not, of course, just going to be the corners. Meaning area, any area on the east that is interior of our new line that we created, our eastern border, that's also going to be gained as well. But in other words, the maximum gain is going to be coming in the corners when you're going to be having now these protruded lines on the eastern side, northern side. They're going to be meeting one another, and that's also going to be a significant gain. So Ad Kan Divrei HaMishnah, and so the Mishnah introduces us to this idea that when creating a perimeter around the city, a border around the city, you operate with the most protruded structures in the city in order to create the borders on the northeast, southwest side. Okay, and presumably the Mishnah over here, when describing the square, so obviously we need an orientation to the square. Otherwise, we could always turn the square a little bit on its axis, and we can always keep gaining corners. So presumably, the Mishnah doesn't say this point blank, but presumably over here, everything can only be squared on the due north axis. That seems to be a simple reading of the Mishnah, simple understanding of the Mishnah, I should say. We start with the Gemara and Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're going to start, first of all, with a number of machlokesim between Rav and Shmuel. The first one's connected to our Mishnah, and the second ones are not connected to our Mishnah, but thematically connected. Rav and Shmuel, chad tenei ma'abrin, v'chad tenei ma'avrin. So when learning the Mishnah, what is the correct nusach ha-Mishnah? So if you look back at our Mishnah, we have it with an ayin. But the Amoraim debate exactly what the correct text is. Some say with an ayin, some say with an aleph. And it goes all the way back to Rav and Shmuel as a machlokas. Man didni ma'avrin. Now with an aleph, so what would its meaning be? Aver. It's limbs of a person. So limbs of a person. So basically we're looking at things that jut out, that protrude. The extremities of a person. And so this, in a similar vein, we're going to be doing the same thing with the city. Now, anything that protrudes is now going to be defining the borders of the city. Now with an ayin, so in what regard is the ubar going to remind us of this city? And that is a pregnant woman who's going to have now her stomach protruding. Similar manner in which the city now is going to have walls that are, the houses that are protruding. Ma'aras ha-machpelah. Okay, so that's our Mishnah, Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, what the correct nusach of the Mishnah is. And now we go on and we're going to be discussing other definitional arguments between Rav and Shmuel. And a lot of these are classic. Rashi brings them down on Chumash. So over here, what's the definition of Ma'aras ha-machpelah, the purchase that Avraham made in order to create a cemetery plot for his wife. And so he purchased this Ma'aras ha-machpelah in an unusual language. So Rav and Shmuel, Chana Mar Shnei Batim Zu Lifnei Mizu. So one understanding is that it's houses that are interior one to the other. V'chad amar bais v'ali, and the other one says that it's a house with a roof on top. V'aliyah al gabav. Roof meaning, sorry, a second story on top of it. Bisham laman damar zeh agav zeh dahainu machpelah. Now, the word machpelah, kaful, means double. And it's more likely, it's definitionally better fitting to describe one house on top of another being a double house. Right, just in modern terminology, a double-decker bus, right? One on top of another, right? Side by side, the word kaful, yes, you could describe it with the word kaful, but it's more definitionally appropriate to describe it when it's one on top of the other. So, but if it's just simply a house with an interior section to it, the word machpelah doesn't really fit so much definitionally. So the Gemara says, shikfula bezugo. So the Gemara says, yeah. But with the way we could describe it is that it's the word kfeilah is not going on the structure, but rather going as a description of those that are buried there. Mamre, and we know that there are pairs that are, those that are buried there. Mamre Kiras Arba. And in fact, if we go on in the Psukim in Chayisar, in Parshas Chayisar, we're going to see that there's an allusion to those that were buried there. The Torah itself does not give a blatant description of those that are buried there, but we know it based on our Mesara. Amre Yitzchak Kiras Arba, Zugos, Adam, V'chava, Avram, V'sara, Yitzchak, V'rivka, Yaakov, Aleya. So Adam and Chava, together with the Emaus and the Avos, with notable exception, of course, to Rachel, who is not buried over there. Vayhibi me Am Rafael. We're going now to the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, and towards the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, so there was a world war. And one of the kings at the time was Am Rafael. And who was he? Rav Shmuel, Charamar, Nimrod Shmo, V'lam Nikra Shmo Am Rafael. So we have Machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. And so one is that Am Rafael really is Nimrod. And he's called Am Rafael, Sha'amar V'yipil Avram Avinu B'soch Kivshana Eish. So, and the Medrash that everyone's familiar with, okay, exaggeration about everybody, but most are familiar with the Medrash, that Nimrod threw Avram into the fire. And so the word Am Rafael now is a contraction of the word Hipil, Amar V'yipil. Right, he made a declaration. He gave the instruction to throw Avram into the fire. When Avram refused to be Oved Avodah Zarah, or could be connected to the destruction of the Avodah Zarah that Avram did in his father's store. Again, all the Midrashim that we're familiar with. Now the other position is, no, you got the person right, but you mixed up the proper name and the descriptive name. The proper name is actually Am Rafael. The descriptive name is Nimrod. Shemrit is kol ha'olam kulo alav b'machuso. And Nimrod, from the word merid, rebellion, and he led a rebellion. He led a rebellion against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Next, v'yikam el chadash ha'mitzrayim. We're now in the beginning of Sefer Shmos, Parsha Shmos, and the new king of Egypt. And Rav Shmuel amar chadash mamash, v'chad amar shin izchashu gzeresav. Okay, and again, classic machlokas, Rashi brings it down on Chumash. And when we say new king, are we describing a new king? Are we describing a king that just simply renewed himself? And Mandam Chadash Mamash Tichsiv, Chadash. Okay, so the one who argues that it's a new king doesn't have to make such a strong argument, as the Pasuk itself says, it's a new king. Now, Umanda Amashin is Chashuk Zerasav, Midaloksiv Vayamas Vayimloch. Now, if you're going to argue that it's a king that just renewed himself, right, tried to do a makeover, if you will. So it's based on the fact that the pasuk does not describe the death of the previous king. Now, if you're going to argue that it's just Paru having a makeover and basically changing his attitude, so what does it mean when it says he didn't know Yosef? It makes much more sense to suggest that's a brand new Paro and he's not familiar with Yosef. Although even that's difficult, you would imagine that the next Paro is going to learn a little bit about history of Egypt. And especially the history of the more recent, right, modern Egyptian history, modern from his perspective. So, but still, it's at least a more workable pshat to say that it's a new paro. But if it's the same old paro, what does it mean? Asher lo yidas Yosef. So my asher lo yidas Yosef to have to mi kamanda lo yadalei li Yosef klal. It means that, of course, he knew exactly who Yosef was, but because he was going to be starting harsh edicts against the Jewish people, so therefore it's as if he pretended as if he didn't know Yosef. He wouldn't have to be Makir Tov anymore to the good that Yosef did for the country of Egypt, and therefore for all the family members of Yosef. Okay, Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of the Machloksim between Rav and Shmuel. All this started because the question of our Mishnah, when the Mishnah says, Ketzad Ma'avrin, it's a Arim, we're talking about now the extension of the city in order to creating the border of the city. So the word Ebor is with an alpha, with an ayin. So there are two plausible ways to say it over. Machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. We continue now in the Gemara. We have simanim in order to set us up for the upcoming Gemara. The basic theme of the upcoming Gemara, it's going to be mostly Agadata Ashkafa. But it's going to be mostly statements by Rabbi Yochanan. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Yuches Yomim Gidalti Eitzel Rabbi Yoshia Baribi. So there were 18 days in which I was under the tutelage of Rabbi Yoshia. So, and really I learned just but one thing. And that is that in the Mishnah here, the beginning of the fifth parak of Erevin, so Ketzad Ma'abrin, it's with an Aleph, not with an Ayin. Eni v'amar Rav Yochanan Yud Beis Amidam Hayu Lo L'Rav Yoshia B'Ribi V'Yud Ches Yamim Gidalti B'Nem V'Limarati Lev Kol Echa V'Echa V'Chachmas Kol Echa V'Echad. So the Gemara tries to match this against another statement of Rav Yochanan, which is that there were 12 students of Rav Yoshia, and when I learned by him for those 18 days, so I got a good understanding of all the students. And so the Gemara thinks now, so if he got a good understanding of all the students, it must be that he learned a lot. So the Gemara says, yeah, he did learn a lot about the students. So, and that's the Gemara's answer. Leif kol echad ve'echad ve'chachmas kol echad ve'echad gamar. Gemar lo gamar. So yeah, so he got to understand the students very well, but in terms of actual learning, he didn't get to learn a whole lot. Ibai sema minayu didhu gamar, minay dide lo gamar. Or, alternatively, he learned a lot from those 12 students, but he did not learn a lot from Rabbi Yoshia himself. Ibai sema davar echad ve'mishnasenu kamar. Or, and the simplest pshat is that no, he learned a lot by Rabbi Yoshia. It just happens to be that regarding Mishnayos, either our Mishnah or Mishnayos in general, so he learned only one thing. But in terms of other parts, other departments of the Torah, Braisos, Toseftas, and just basic Svara, so it could be that over there he learned a tremendous amount. Am Rabbi Yochanan Kishayinu Lomdim Torah Itzah Rabbi Yoshia Hainu Yoshim Arbar Arbar Bama. Am Rabbi Kishayiti Lomdim Torah Itzah Rabbi Elazar Ben Shamua. Hainu Yoshim Shisha Shisha Ba'ama. So the Gemara gives descriptions now of master teachers of Torah. One of Rabbi Yoshim, Rabbi Yochanan describes how the students gathered around. Rashi over here gives a very positive take on these Gemaras. The students were so drawn to these Rebbeim that they basically crowded around the area. To Rabbi Yoshia, four people per Amma. Now, it's got to be a bit of an exaggeration because we know the Gemara in Sukkah says that a person occupies one Amma. It's funny, I quoted the Gemara in Sukkah. We just learned it in Gemara in Erevin here we were really discussing more the height of a person. But in terms of the width of a person, is an Amma. That's the Gemara in Sukkah. Anyway, so four students per Amma, it just simply means that they really packed in the shiur because they really wanted to hear from Rabbi Yoshia. And as far as Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, so Rabbi gives an account, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi gives an account where it was six people per Amma. They were so excited to hear Torah from Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. Am Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Yoshia Rabbi Bedaro ka Rabbi Meir Bedaro. Rabbi Yochanan gives one more statement regarding Rabbi Yoshia, right, where he went to learn 18 days, and this will help us understand, because at first when we presented this position that he only learned by him for 18 days, and he learned practically nothing, that sounded negative, it sounds deflating, it doesn't sound complimentary, but now we're going to understand it a lot better. And that is, Rabbi Yochanan says, let me make the following comparison. Rabbi Yoshi in his generation was like Rabbi Meir in his generation. My Rabbi Meir b'dor lo yachlu chaver la'amod osof da'ato. Af Rabbi Yoshi lo yachlu chaver la'amod osof da'ato. You know, Rabbi Meir, he was just simply heads and shoulders above everyone else in terms of his understanding, his comprehension, his ability to analyze. He just ran circles around the other colleagues in terms of his ability to provide analysis of any particular sugya. In fact, it was so good they didn't fully understand him. And Rav Yochanan says the same thing is true regarding Rav Yoshia. He spoke above everybody else. His understanding was too sharp, and they just simply couldn't follow him. I'm Rav Yochanan Liban Rishonim Kepitzcho She'ulam. And now Rav Yochanan goes on and bemoans the idea that the earlier generation, so they just understood things better. So Rav Yochanan says the earlier generations, their heart was like the entrance of the Ulam. As we've described many times, as you're walking into the actual edifice of the Beis HaMikdash. So you first go into a foyer, an antechamber, that's the Ulam, and then you go into the actual Heichal itself. The entrance to the Ulam was 40 Amas high, 20 Amas wide. And then you go into the entrance of the actual Heichal, so it's 20 Amas high, 10 Amas wide. So the heart of the earlier generations was like the entrance of the Ulam. V'shalachron and kipitzcho shal heichal. Later generations like the entrance of the heichal. V'eino v'anu kemalei nekev machat tzidkis. And now Rav Yochanan says, what about our generation? So like the hole of a needle, very small. And our understanding and our hearts and ability to understand is just but a fraction of what the earlier generations. Now everything, of course, is relative. When he talks about earlier generations, he's referring to the Rishonim. So these are the earlier generations. So who is he making reference to? Rishonim Rabbi Akiva. It's a reference to going back already a couple generations to Rabbi Akiva. So he's not going back historically that far. Meaning the generation Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yochanan was first generation Amora. Rabbi Akiva was one of the later Tanaim. See, he saw the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So you're only going back a couple generations from Rabbi Yochanan back to Rabbi Akiva. And Acharonim Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua is also maybe a generation before Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, we just learned together that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was a student of Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. And Rabbi Yochanan was a generation after Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Okay, so we're really not going far back from Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Yochanan says, Niskatnu Adoros, the diminishment of the generations is such where it really suffered significant diminishment from basically the period of the Tanaim to the beginning of the period of the Amoraim. Igadami Rishon Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, Achronim Rabbi Yoshe Beribi. And now, in another version, it's even a smaller chunk of Jewish history, meaning the Rishonim go back to Rav Elazar ben Shemua, which we just established, a couple of generations before Rav Yochanan, maybe, meaning the Rebbe, one of the Rebbeim of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and the later generations, Rav Oshia Beribi, and Rav Yochanan learned by Rav Oshia Beribi. So we're really describing over here the generation above Rav Yochanan and two generations above Rav Yochanan. V'anu kemlo nekev machasitkis. And again, now, Rav Yochanan himself describing his own generation, so we just basically the hole in which a needle can go, or maybe the hole, the actual needle itself, meaning a really small area compared to the entrance of the Ulam and the Heichal. Amar Abai Va'anan Kisichta Beguda Ligamara. Abai says, now let's talk about our generation. Abai is a couple generations after Rav Yochanan. Abai and Rava are in the middle Tkufa of the Amoraim. The Amoraim span from the end of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, approximately the end of the 2nd century, and takes us to Ravina and Ravashi, which is towards the end of the 5th century. And so Abai and Rava are right in that middle of the Tkufa, so they're already a couple of generations after Rabbi Yochanan, and so they're describing now their generation. So Kisichta Beguda, it's like taking a peg and putting it into a block of wood. It'll make some penetration, but really not a whole lot. In other words, not even a hole. So Amar Rava Va'anan ki itzba'isa bekira l'svara. And Rava says that in terms of svara, Abai was describing Gemara. Just in other words, the ability to understand the sources. Rava was talking about the analysis. As far as the analysis is concerned, it's like basically trying to take your finger and put it into hard wax. You'll maybe make an impression. But after that, certainly there's not going to be much penetration. And it goes without saying that you're not going to be able to see through it. So in terms of Svara, Rava says that's how occluded we are in terms of our understanding and analysis as opposed to the earlier generations. Ravashi now, we're at the end of the Tkufa of the Amoraim, and Ravashi now describing not the ability to understand and gain insight. At this point in time, we can only imagine how difficult it must have been relative to the earlier generations. But in terms of forgetting, so basically we're like a finger going into a barrel for forgetting. Meaning you try to plug up a barrel with just but your finger. And obviously the imagery over here, there's going to be plenty of water coming out. Rav Ashi says that's where we stand in terms of shechacha. And maybe, perhaps, the Gemara doesn't make this this leap, but maybe we can begin to understand the need, therefore, to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. Meaning that we're describing over here different periods of time where Torah Shebaal Peh was written down, Rav Yochanan, immediately after Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, where the Mishnayos were written down, and Ravina, Rav Ashi, the end of the Tkufa, they're both, but the Gemara here quotes Rav Ashi, the end of the Tkufa of the Amoraim, in which the Gemara was written down, and so when you're looking at these moments where there was a precipitous drop in Bina Chachma, understanding of the Torah, So maybe it was specifically at these points that they felt the need, they felt such a strong need to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. Continuing in the Gemara, we are now towards the bottom of Negim Amud Aleph, and we're continuing over here. We went through the statements of Rabbi Yochanan, and now the Gemara is going to be drawing parallels and comparisons between the Bnei Yehuda, the Bnei Galo. Bnei Yehuda, typically a description of people living in the southern section of Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, and any part south, and the Bnei Galo is the northern part of Eretz Yisrael, Tzfas and Beit She'an and whatever any parts around the Kinneret. So the Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, B'nei Yehuda, Sheikpidu al Shonam Niskayim Torah Sam B'Yadam. So as far as the B'nei Yehuda, they were makbid on their language. And so therefore they had a Kiyam Torah. The B'nei Galo, however, Shelo Yikpid al Lashonam, they weren't careful about the language. So Lo Niskayim Torah Sam B'Yadam. So the Torah was not fully established by them. Now, Mita B'Kpeda Talia Milsa. Now, the way the Gemara first says it is that they were makbid on their language, which means that they were very clean, and they didn't say anything that was slightly off. So the Gemara says, Ella, B'nei Yehuda de Daiki Lishno. So the Gemara says, okay, well, just say it a little bit differently, but now we'll understand the connection to that and their ability to hold on to Torah. So B'nei Yehuda, where they were Medaik B'Lashon, they were very precise in their language. U'mitznachalu u'simana. And so therefore, they can have excellent mnemonics to help them remember the Torah because of the precision of language. B'nei Galo were not that precise in the language, and therefore they did not have a Kima Torah. B'nei Yehuda gamru, Michad Rabba, Niskayim Torah Sam B'Yadam. More comparisons. So the B'nei Yehuda, they learned the Torah by one Rebbe. Learning the Torah by one Rebbe, so you're able to amass more information and more easily. Because once you're used to the style of the Rebbe, you're able now to hear all the information and it's clear. However, B'nei Galo, D'lo Gamri Mechad Rabba, Lo Niskayim Torah Sam B'Yadam. The B'nei Galo, their minhag was to learn Torah from multiple Rebbeim, but that now each new Rebbe presented a new style. And it was just more difficult to amass more information. Ravina Amar B'nei Yehuda, D'galo Masechta Niskayim Torah Sam B'Yadam. B'nei Galo, D'lo Galo Masechta, Lo Niskayim Torah Sam B'Yadam. And again, another comparison, another contrast between the B'nei Yehuda and the B'nei Galo. So the B'nei Galo were able to be Megala Masechta. On the other hand, the B'nei Galil were unable to be Megala Masechta. What does that mean to be Megala Masechta? Rashi offers here two explanations. Galo Masechta Rashi, four lines before the bottom of the Amud. So, Limdu L'Acherim Kach Shamati. So, one Pshat in Rashi, Galo Masechta is the ability to teach it to others. Lishna Achrin, Rashi offers a second Pshat. Mifarshin Shmosam Medaktikim B'tam Oshodavar Ad Shis Yashe B'Liban. The ability to clearly explain the Torah and give clarity. So that is the Gilui that's being described over here. David, Galim Masechta Shalom Galim Masechta. And now we were comparing and contrasting the B'nai Yehuda to B'nai Galo. The Gemara now is going to do the same type of contrast between the kings of David and Shaul. David was Megalim Masechta, Shaul was not Megalim Masechta. David, Degalim Masechta, Ksivei, Yira'ech, Yir'uni, V'yismechu. David, when describing his ability to teach Torah, so people walked away happy because they understood. Shol delo galim esechta ksevei asher yifneh yarshia. On the other hand, however, the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Shmuel Aleph, and slightly out of context, but the point is that the Gemara understands it in light of Shol's ability to explain was not as clear, and so therefore people were marshia. Now, literally translated from the word vicious and evil, but over here it just simply means that the halacha did not follow like Shaul, and the Gemara connects it to his inability to be clear about presenting the halacha. Amar Rav Yochanan Minayin Shemach Halacha Shbaruch Lo So Avon. And now, the Gemara is going to just make one quick comment regarding Shaul, as long as it came up. Not exactly sure how it connects to our discussion, but Shaul received the mechila for that sin. When we say that sin, so what are we talking about? It's interesting because in my head I was thinking about two pronounced events. One being his incomplete task of wiping out Amalek, and the other is the wiping out of the cities of Nov, Ira, Kohanim. The Gemara here is making reference to the latter. So, and it's clear, I mean, Rashi says it, but it's clear also based on the Pesukim, the Gemara quote. So Shenema Machar Atau Venecha Imi. Imi Bech Mechitasi. So the pasuk says that together you and your children will be with me tomorrow, meaning in Olam Haba, and that's how the Gemara understands it. Imi Bech Mechitasi. It's a reference to Olam Haba. Amar Rabbi Abi Iika. De Mashaluhu Levne Yehuda, De Daikalishna, Ma'avrintanan O Ma'avrintanan. And now we're going to go back to the precision of language and we're going to go all the way back to our Mishnah. As we are now on the top of Nigimo Amud Beis. So, if somebody could please ask, this is now Rabbi Abba putting out the following petition. if somebody could please ask the Bnei Yehuda, and they happen to be very precise in the language, is it Ma'abrintanan or Ma'abrintanan, with an Aleph or an Ayin? And Akuzutanan or Akuzutanan? Mishnah in Bechor is describing a particular blemish that occurs with an animal, and the private area of the animal, the genital region of the animal. And the is the word with an Aleph or an Ayin. Yad Eishaltina Va'amrile Ika Ditni. Ma'avrin v'ikad dini ma'avrin. So he found somebody who was able to ask the Bnei Yehuda. And what he got is, yesh v'yesh. Some have it with an alf, some with an ayin. Ikad dini akuzu v'ikad dini akuzu. Same thing with that Mishnah in, Bechara. Some have it with an aleph, and some have it with an ayin. We're continuing now in the Gemara. We are a little bit down on the Amud Beis. Bnei Yehuda daika lishnei. So Mahi. So this idea that the Bnei Yehuda were very precise in their language. So the Gemara says, let's go through a number of examples of this. Da'u bar Yehuda da'amar luhu. So a member of the community said, Talas yeshli limkor. Okay, I have a cloak. I'm going to sell it. So Amalei, my gavan talischa. Okay, what color? What color is it? Amalei, kitrajin alei adama. So it is like it's like the Trojan. We normally understand the Trojan is a beet, and we understand it normally to be, and beets, of course, we know are red. But if you look at Rashi over here, you get the impression from Rashi that the Tardin of the Gemara are not beets. Rashi writes over here that it's green. Now, Yerok, Rashi calls it Yerok, Rokas, Haisa, Kitseva, Yerok, Ha'aretz. Now, it sounds like Rashi is describing a green over here. Sometimes Yerok can mean yellow as well, but we certainly know that what Yerok is not is Yerok is not red. So, probably from the Gemara's perspective, so the Trojan are not beets. But anyway, we in our modern Hebrew, so Trojan are beets. Anyway, Bnei Galil Delo Daika Lishna Maihi. Give me an example of the Bnei Galil not being precise in the language. The Gemara says, fine. So the Tanya probably doesn't belong over here. That's why it's in parentheses. Da'u Bar Galila Da'avakazu Va'amrluhu. A person from the Galil, and he said to his friend, Amalaman, Amalaman. Now he said Amar Laman. Now the word Amar means to speak, but that's not what he meant. And so that's exactly the point. In other words, he was imprecise in his language. So Amar Lay, so they asked him for clarification. Glila Shota, right? Stupid Galilean. Admittedly, it's strong language. But anyway, okay, fine. So Chamar Lamerkov. Now when you said the word Amar, so he was clearly trying to pronounce a guttural letter. Which guttural letter are we talking about? Are we saying Chamar? Right? Do you want a donkey? Oh, chamar lemishta, or do you want drink? Right? Wine. Or amar lemilbash, or maybe the guttural letter ayin. You know, for us Ashkenazim, it's not a guttural letter, but right, clearly back in the day, it's supposed to be a guttural letter. Anyway, amar lemilbash. So the or maybe you want wool because you want some clothing. Oh, imar liitkase. Or maybe you want a sheep because you want to slaughter a sheep. The word itkaseh in Aramaic means to slaughter. Rashi right over here. Hayisasa debalameim lechaverta. Another example of the imprecision of the speech of the Galileans. So the Gemara turns its attention to a woman who says, Taida uchlecha chalba. She was inviting somebody else to go and have with her chalev, right? Fat. Obviously the type that you're allowed to eat. Chalev of an animal, most of it is prohibited. Right, the fat of a muscle. Anyway, so Amar La Shul Kati Tuchlech Livya. So her language was so imprecise, as much as she was trying to say the phrase Tai De Uchlech Alba, what came out of her was Shluchti Tuchlech Levaya, which means basically a lion should eat you. The word Lavya from the word Lavi. So a lion should eat you. That's what came out of her mouth. Hawisa said to Asila Kamidina, another example. A woman was going to a judge. So Amar La, she says to him, Mari Kiri. So, my master, but the word, she said, was Kiri, which means slave. Tafya Havali. I have a beam. Viganuvach min. And it was stole from me. Ukidu Havas. Now, Davar Shajule Ilave. Alo Mate Karecha Ara. She's trying to give a description of this beam so that the judge will understand her claim. And basically, she says that it was so high that basically if we were to hold it up and you were to hang yourself on it, your feet wouldn't hit the ground. Okay, so obviously it's comical, but It's also very unflattering to the judge in the way she's describing the height of the beam. And if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi does spend a lot of time in terms of what she was trying to say, what actually came out of her mouth. So you see Rashi over here for the linguistics in terms of what she in fact was trying to say. But that's what came out of her mouth, and again, the imprecise language. Amasa de Bei Rebbe, we turn now to the housewife of Rebbe, the maidservant of Rebbe, better description. And throughout Shas, we are given snippets throughout about her personality, assuming, it's of course, that's the same maidservant. We're never given a name, so it could be that it could be a maidservant and not the maidservant, whatever the case is. Right, you're living in the house of Rebbe, probably through a lot of osmosis, so there's a lot you're going to be picking up. So Amasa de Bei Rebbe, ki hava mishtai b'lashon chachma, and now she would talk in Lashon Chachma. Now for the remaining part of today's daf, we're going to be speaking about Lashon Chachma. Lashon Chachma basically is to speak in riddles. Okay, in other words, speaking in a way in which people who are highly intelligent are going to be able to decode what you're saying, but not necessarily the masses. And so this Lashon Chachma is basically a way to communicate with people who are of a certain ability to interpret and decode. So Amra Hachi. So the Gemara is going to give numerous examples of this Lashon Chachma. So she says, Ala Nakfak Bekad, the ladle's hitting the barrel. Yadu Nishral Kenayu, the eagle should fly home. And basically she's saying to the students, we're out of drink. There's no more wine over here. Rebbe is no longer hosting anymore. Okay, gentlemen, it's time to go home. Vekanav Abay Delesvun. And when she wanted the students to be staying at the table, Havar Amarlu, she would say to him, Ya'adi Basar Chaver Tamina. We're going to be taking off her friend. And she's making a reference to the barrels of wine. Meaning, basically, we're going to be opening up another barrel. Vititkafi Alat Be'kad Be'ofa Da'atla Biyama. And what the ladle is going to do is the ladle is going to float on the barrel, much like a ship that's going on the sea. Okay, so basically, it's a way of her saying, gentlemen, stay because we're gonna open up another barrel of wine. Rav Yossi Bar Asyan ki hava mishtai b'lashon chachma amar. Another example. Rav Yossi Bar Asyan. So when he wanted to speak in a way in which only certain people can understand him, so he says asur lishur b'mishpat b'tun miskan. So I want literally an ox of judgment, and b'tur miskan, right, in modern Hebrew also miskain, right, on this poor mountain. He was making a reference to beets and mustard. And see Rashi over here, it gives a description of how we get from what he's saying to the words beets and mustard. And when he wanted to know about a particular innkeeper, right? In other words, he wanted to find out the rating of a particular hotel. So he would say, Gvarpum din chai. Is the mouth of this man, is it alive? Mazutivo yesh. And what's going on over there? And basically, it is an Aramaic description of the word uspizin, okay, as we are just but a couple of days away from Sukkos, so a Sukkos connection. Basically, uspizin, what's going on over there with that particular inn? Rabbi Abau, ki ava mishayim b'lashon chachma. Another example, Rabbi Abau, havar ma'achi, this is how he would say, atrigal u'pechamim, okay, our second Sukkos reference this morning. So he wants coals like an esrog, okay. Not exactly clear what the analogy is between coals and an esrog. I'll think more about it. But anyway, so arkiu lizahavin, spread out the gold. Basically, what he wants is it's his smart way of saying let's start the coals going. Asu shlishne migide ba'alta, and two migide ba'alta, those things that walk in the dark. In other words, roosters. Roosters walk in the dark. Right, we wake up in the morning. So basically, it's his way of saying, let's grill two chickens. In another version, it's the same basic statement. It's just a slightly different version of him saying, roast up, start the grill, because we're going to roast two chickens. Amalei Rabbanan Rabbi Abahu, Hatzpina Heicher Rabbi Elazar Eli Tzafon. We want to know where Rabbi Eli is hiding. Let's ask a simple question. Why is Rabbi Eli hiding? So Rashi over here gives a simple and really beautiful explanation. Tzafon, Havem Mischabe, Rashi, second wide line. He was hiding below Hayu Yodim, Matamidim, Laichen Hayar, Vayu Sholem Imenu. He wanted some quiet time. He knows that if he was in the base medrash, the students would be asking him questions all the time, and he wanted just simply some time alone. And so they asked Rabbi Abbo, where is Rabbi Eli hiding? Now, obviously, the whole point of hiding is you don't want people to know where you are. And, okay, obviously, Rabbi Abbo knew that that wasn't exactly his goal. But anyway, so Amar Lahem, so Rabbi Abbo's answer is, Alaz ben Nara, Aharonis. He was with a Nara, literally a young woman, Aharonis, from the family of Aaron, meaning Cohen. Acharonis, and it's the latest one, and Ironis, and she kept him awake the whole night. Vihin Arto, and she kept him awake the whole night. So Amrilei, now in terms of understanding what the statement was, so Amrilei Isha, so the simple understanding, which is the first explanation of the Gemara, is that basically he was with his wife. Now, admittedly, by the way, it's just slightly uncomfortable because obviously this is information that you should not be sharing with the students. So understanding, he's speaking B'lashon Chachma, and it takes a little bit of decoding to understand what he's saying, but once you understand what he's saying, at least according to the first way the Gemara spells it out, so he's giving out private information, and extraordinarily private information, and so it's admittedly difficult to understand how such information, which is normally obviously supposed to be kept sanua, so how is he revealing this information, even if he's doing it through Derech Chachma, Lashon Chachma. V'amrei Masechta, now in the second version of the Gemara, it was a reference to a particular Masechet of Gemara. In other words, he was up the whole night learning Gemara. So Amar Lei Rabbi Eli, has been in Heichan Rabbi Abbo Tzafon. They turn to Rabbi Eli and they says, could you tell us where Rabbi Abbo is hiding? Amar Lei Nisiais B'machtir. So he took advice from the one who crowns, meaning probably either the Reish Galusa or whatever political power was the head, or the whatever. He went to the authorities. And vihin give lemipi boshet. Sorry, vihin give lemipi boshes. And he went south to mipi boshes. In other words, they gave him the right to become the nasi. The word negev over here means south, right? If you want to get smart, says the Gemara. So hamachim yadrim. So you go south. And over here it means basically that he becomes a tremendous talmid chacham. And he was given the authority to become the Nasi. I'm Rabbi Yishuv ben Chananya, Miyamai lo nitzachti Adam. Rabbi Yishuv ben Chananya says, as far as debates go, so nobody beat me in a debate, with notable exception of Chutz Mi'isha Tinok V'Tinokes, except for a woman, except for a child, and except for a young boy and a young girl. Okay, in other words, and obviously his point is that, you know, I know I'm talented, but there are times where people beat me, people I don't normally expect to beat me, in fact, beat me in a debate, and it's humbling. So Isha Mahi. So we're finishing up the daf with these three encounters. One, the encounter with a woman. Pamachas nizarachti etzel achsanaya chad. So I was staying by an inas of the Lee Pulin, and the matron of the inn, she made beans, biyom rishon achaltim v'lo shirati mehem klum. Shnia, v'lo shayarti mehem klom. Days 1 and 2, I ate the beans total. They were fantastic, and I didn't leave anything over. B'yam shishi, k'takdicha memelach. And then on the third day, she added too much salt. And kevin shetamti mashachti yadami hen. I tasted them, and that was it. I was done. I wasn't going to be eating any more that third night. So Amrili, she says to me, Rebbe, mibnei ma'in chasoed. And she says, so what's going on? Why don't you like the beans this evening? So Amarti la. So he makes an excuse up. He says, I already ate that day. So Amrili, she says to me, really, you weren't hungry. I saw the way you attacked that bread. So Amrili, Rabbi Shem Eloi Nachbi, Pea Berishonim. And she says, well, maybe the following. Maybe you didn't leave over any on the first night or on the second night. And basically what she's doing is she's elbowing him, figuratively, and she basically saying, you know, that was not appropriate. Meaning for you to have eaten all the beans on the first and second night, that wasn't right. And now she's quoting Chazal in Misharin Peya Be'ilfis Ava Misharin Peya Bekara. That in terms of the serving pot, so that's supposed to be finished. But in terms of the But in terms of the plate, right, kara seemingly is what is brought to the table. But whatever the case is, in terms of the plate, so you're supposed to leave over a portion. And why are you supposed to be leaving over a portion? So the so if you look at the bottom Rashi over here, ain misharin apeah beilfis kisha hashamish ma'arim in eilfis l'socha kara in derech lahaniach beilfis klom l'tzorcho. So as far as the shamish, the attendant, when going from the serving tray, so from that nothing's supposed to be left over for him. Aval ka'ach haminich peah bekara machzir l'shamish v'hu ma'achal shamash. And basically, once everyone is served, so on their plate, they're supposed to leave a little bit over in order for the shamash to eat. Now, admittedly, by the way, it's a little bit difficult to understand, meaning the shamash is going to be eating from everybody's leftovers as opposed to just leaving over a portion from the serving tray. So I don't fully understand the etiquette, I'm admitting, but nevertheless, so that was the etiquette. So the etiquette was that everyone was supposed to leave over from their own plate. And so what this woman was pointing out to... woman was pointing out to Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya is that you didn't do that the first night, you didn't do that the second night. And maybe she's just, you know, it's banter. In other words, it's not the reason why, but maybe she's saying you left so much over on the third night to make up for the fact that you didn't leave over the first and second night. But anyway, but he didn't follow proper etiquette. So, and the Gemara didn't say it, but basically we saw it already in the introduction. Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya was basically saying, and you know what? She was right. Tinokus Mahi, the second encounter. This is the one now with the Tinokus. Pamachas Aisim Alach Bederech. So I was walking by Tederech Overs Besade. There was a path in the field. Aisim Alach Ba. I walked through the path. Amrli Tinokus Acha. So a young girl said to me, Rabbi Losadi Hizu. And she says, wait one second. You're walking through somebody's property. It's private property. So Amarti La Alo Derech Kavushahi. So Rabbi Yeshua says to this young girl, what do you mean it's private property? There is a path going right through. People walk through this area. It must be that there is some sort of easement over here. So Lo Derech Kavushahi. So Amar Li, and she said back to me, Listen Kaboska Kavshua. Easement. Get out of here, easement. In other words, if people helped themselves to this path and they were robbers, meaning they had no right to go through this path. And that's what created this quote-unquote easement. It wasn't an easement. It's just other people helped themselves to walking through, and that's what created the pathway. And you're just like them. And again, he recognizes the fact that, yep, she was right. And Tinok Mahi, and we're now in our third encounter with Rabbi Yeshua, and this is with the young boy. And Pamachas Ha'isa Malach Bederek Verisi Tinok Yosheva Al Parshas Derachim. And I got to a crossroad, and there was a young boy over there. Amartilo Be'ezah Derech Ne'elech Le'ir. So I could take either path to get to the city. Which one should I take? And Amar Li, so the young boy said to me, Zuk Sarav Arucha. Well, this one's path is shorter, but it's going to end up being longer. And Vizu Arucha Kitzara. Now the other path is going to be longer, but it's going to end up being shorter. V'alachti B'Kitzara V'Arucha. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, so which one should I go? I'll go down the shorter path. Despite the fact that the young boy said, you know, it's shorter, but it's really going to be longer. But Rav Yoshua didn't understand. And Kevin Shigati Liir Matsasi Shemakipita so Ganos Upardesim Chazarti La Achorai. So I got now on the shorter path and I did get to the city, but there was no entrance into the city taking the shorter path. And now I had to walk around the vineyards, the orchards, and in order to get into the entrance into the city. So Amartili Bini Allah Amartila Ksara. And I went back to the kid at the crossroads and I said, wait one second, kid. You told me it was the shorter path. It's not the shorter path. So Amar Li, V'la Marti La Aruka. The kid said, what do you mean? That's exactly what I said. I said, it's a shorter path, but it's going to end up taking you longer. So Nishakti Al Rosho, I kissed him on the head. V'amarti La'o, Ashrechem Yisrael, Shekulchem Chachamim Gedolim Atem, Migedolchem V'ad Ketanchem. And he said, Ashrechem Yisrael, you're so smart. The older amongst you, the younger amongst you, what a bunch of smart people. Adkan will stop over here at the two dots, pick it up tomorrow at the two dots, and gives us a great opportunity to review the dot. In terms of words, a lot of words in today's dot, but in terms of topics that were covered, it's going to be easy to review. First, the basic point of the Mishnah, in that when creating a border around the city, we're going to go with the most exterior house to be creating the north, south, east, west border, and we're going to be drawing a line running on the north side, due east, due west, and the same thing with the other four, with the other three sides, in order to create just simply the border around the city, so that the Tchum Shabbos begins after that line that's drawn, and probably with those lines that are drawn, we're going to be getting a lot of area, a lot of empty area outside the city, but still considered part of the actual city itself. And in terms of the structures that are going to be expanding the city, so the Mishnah described many different types of structures. The word that's used to describe city expansion, so the word that was used was me'abrin. And so our first discussion this morning in the Gemara between Rav and Shmuel is that me'abrin with an aleph or me'abrin with an ayin, and machlokes between them, which engendered more discussion between Rav and Shmuel. What's the language of Maras HaMachpelah? What's the language? What is the king Amraphel? Who is he? And what was his proper name? And also, V'yakam Melech Chadash HaMitzrayim, the new paro that takes over in the beginning of Sefer Shmos, was it a new paro or just simply a paro that renewed himself? Rav Yochanan, many statements said in the second half of the Amud Aleph of today of Rav Yochanan, basically all speaking to the idea of Niskatnu Adoros, as we move from the generations, basically from the end of the period of the Tanaim to the beginning of the period of the Amorayim, so the diminishment of the generations and our ability to understand Torah. And then we heard from Abai and Rava also describing further diminishment, and then we heard from Rav Ashi, who is at the end of the period of the Amorayim, even describing further diminishment of our understanding. The difference between B'nai Yehuda versus B'nai Galil. B'nai Yehuda, precise in their language. B'nai Galil, not so precise. And the Gemara goes over many examples of this regarding B'nai Yehuda, B'nai Galil, taking us to the Amud Beis. And the Amud Beis, we finish up today with Lashon Chachma, a type of language that is spoken between people who, you don't have to say the words out straight. You can say it in a somewhat nuanced fashion, in a veiled fashion. And people who are have the ability to understand, decode, so they're going to be able to understand exactly what you're saying. That's the Lashon Chachma that concluded our daf.